Lunchtime.
So it is. I'm still arranging my desktop a little bit. There we go. Man, it's been a week or two. I was off on spring break last week.
Oh,
And I
yeah.
guess that meant you were too.
This is the first one back.
Can I ask you to go take a week vacation so I can, just do nothing for, because like it's a spring break when you got the kid is still not entirely feels like a, you can't just do it the fuck ever the fuck you want. You just can't just sit around in your underwear. I need you to take a
I would
nice
like
long
to.
go to Italy. Will they have us yet?
No, one will have us yet.
Damn.
Although I feel like we might be one of the first countries that
Yeah.
will be had eventually
Yeah.
because we're doing all right. I hear Canada's doing pretty bad right now, which sucks
A
for
lot of
everybody.
countries are in the vaccination thing. I feel like we're the drunk frat brother, and then like at age 30 suddenly got his life together and you're I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that
Or
comparison, but
like went
yeah.
out, against all advice one night and tried to drive home and somehow made it when his sober brother didn't or something. Yeah, it's like,
Yeah. And then we went to started going to AA and turned her life around, and everybody else started drinking. I don't
I don't know. I
know. I
hear
don't
we're 20, is it 25% of the adult population in one of the states just happened,
I saw the
vaccinations?
stats are something like 73% of every American 65 and older is fully vaccinated,
Okay.
which is pretty amazing. 20, I think 9% of all adult Americans have had their first dose of vaccine, and something like 40, low 40% have had both. So I don't like
Yeah.
I mentioned that like I threw at 70% as like what I hoped would happen, and I felt like even as I said, oh God, that's way too optimistic, but we'll see. I've gotten a big fight on r/Cincinnati this morning with a healthcare provider that was engaging in some vaccine skepticism. But what are you going to do?
Like a
You got your first
healthcare
dose, right?
worker? Yeah, I got
They
mine.
said they're a healthcare provider, which whatever the fuck that means. And also they're just some dumbass on Reddit. So
Yeah.
I'm a neurosurgeon, Jim. I don't know if you've known this.
And a pilot
I'm
and
with a dual major in epidemiology, even though I can't pronounce it reliably. But yeah.
yeah, I got my first shot like not long ago. The shitty thing is, so it opened up on the 29th, right, for people in my age group under 40. And then you couldn't like register for an appointment.
There's like a big crush, right? Of
Yeah, and
people trying to get,
so like
yeah.
everybody who was in this massive age window, right, 16 to 40, it's like a 99.9% of the population, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was all trying to register at once, and so there were no appointments anywhere near us. And my wife was setting up the appointment. She decided, okay, well, you want to get us in soon, right? You don't want to wait around for a month for this thing to slow down. So we had to drive an hour north of Cincinnati to go to a CVS in the middle of nowhere, to get our
Head to
first
rural
dose.
country, yeah.
Yeah. And then drive an hour back, and totally worth it. Like I'm not complaining, but it would have been nice because we have a CVS literally a block away from us. But the appointments got booked up there. So apparently
Yeah.
Let's not say that. On April 20th, we got to go out to this place again and get our second dose. So
Blaze it up
I don't know how I'm going to do
on
that because it's a
420.
Tuesday, and Tuesday is like a pretty busy Walking Dead and stuff kind of day for us. So
I
we'll just have
almost
to move
wondered if you
things.
had waited a week to book, because like I guess there's
Yeah.
like tons and tons and tons of availability now. Like once everybody
Jesus.
got like all the people that are like super excited to get it got in.
All right, well,
There's
we
a
might be able to
speaking of
change
r
ours.
slash. Yeah, I wonder, because speaking of r/Cincinnati, they have a great like COVID thread pinned where everyone's giving tips on like where the and I guess a lot of people are having luck at the mass vaccine site they're running at Duke Energy, the convention center downtown. They're doing like thousands a day.
Nice.
But Yeah, no, I get my final dose next Thursday. It's going to be pretty easy peasy. And then I'll be, but I also, I didn't know, like, I assumed that like the first boost got you like the 40 some percent like efficacy and the next one elevated you to the 95%. I guess it's that's wrong. Like the first boost gets you after 2 weeks over 80%. I've even seen some in the low 90s, and the second one gets you to the 95-96% and lengthens the immunity or strengthens immunity. So
yeah,
I've got like right now I'm probably rocking 80+%, so that's cool. My dad nice. My dad and his girlfriend got their first dose of vaccine after they got back from Florida this week. Yeah, I'm just waiting to see when the kids can get it so yeah. So Jack can not feel left out.
Yeah, but, I don't know, less at risk. I get it, but it sucks that they can't get any.
Yeah, it feels like as a kid sometimes you feel like a second class citizen.
I mean, you are.
In this case you kind of are.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, I'm excited for things to start getting back to normal. I got you know, we talked about the movies that we're going to be covering, and like going back to the theater is going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going on a camping trip with some guys who are all fully vaccinated by the time at the end of April. Some face-to-face time with some friends. It's going to be, yeah, the return to normalcy is going to be, you know, hopefully when we get hit with the variant and everything's cool.
Yeah, also, I was reading a lot about it being pretty effective against the variant that is pretty dominant right now. So far.
And I, you know, like, what are the odds that you're going to get like some screwball variant that's going to like break the, I'm actually not a brain surgeon or an epidemiologist. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it's a huge, huge concern.
No.
But we'll see.
I'm excited.
There's been a lot of notable celebrity deaths today. I don't know if you saw Prince Philip, his royal consort to Her Majesty the Queen, died at the age of 99. DMX just died about an hour ago at the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
Two very different men with very different lived experiences. It's wild because... I'm not old enough to remember like a, you know, this kind of, you know, big royal death. But there was people posting online, like, I guess the BBC, essentially all media ground to a halt at the moment. And they did like a 30-second like moment of silence with like this, you know, this British dude coming in and telling everybody. And then they played the God Save the Queen and then just launched right into royal death coverage. So I don't know how long that'll last. Hmm. It's something weird as an American. It's like such a.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I get it. Like, there's certain presidents when they've died was certainly were an event. Chief justices, senators. You know, if we had a super president that had served for like, what has she been reigning? 75. She's like, she was the commander in chief of World War II. Like, Christ.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's gotta be something else. So,
mm-hmm.
You know. If you feel a certain way about the royals, my sympathies. If you don't, enjoy your weekend. It's funny though, because me and Jack were listening to a lot of DMX on the way back from our camping trip.
What? Because wait, DMX so is Jack like a rapper best known from the 90s.
My son is obsessed with Rick and Morty. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Okay. Done.
So he started and he got in like, because the, you know, DMX is his rap career, if you don't know, is he's kind of a character, and his character was half Pitbull, insane clown gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Like just wildly inappropriate, like just he was just like a contract murder gangster guy. That was his public persona. So that appeals to, and I know it appealed to me back in the day, it appeals to teenage boys, you know, these lawless figures. So he's kind of explored his catalog and we are listening to some of his bangers, yeah, on the way back. And that was before we even knew that he had, had a heart attack. I think it was some sort of overdose and he was fighting for his life. So, Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
I've been
Snarls. DMX and Prince Philip are going to be odd roommates up in a big apartment in the sky. Yeah. Yeah. Those guys showing up within minutes of each other at the turnstiles is going to be going to be wild. What were you saying, Jim?
I've been over the break getting into some some new stuff. I don't know, new stuff, old stuff. I've had did I show this off last time? Oh man, I can barely reach it. I built this over the break. I don't know if you can see what this is.
The metal earth. So these are, if you're not watching the video, there's this company called Metal Earth, and they sell these very thin, like punch stainless steel things.
Here's one of the sheets.
Pop out and you assemble through like careful tweezer work and twisting metal tabs to lock them into place. And they come up with these insanely detailed, high quality miniature sculptures.
So I got into town on one. That because a couple of years ago, my wife bought me a couple of these for Christmas, and I put together the head of this AT-AT like 2 years ago. And then it just sat on the shelf because these things are so fucking hard to put together. The miniaturization, it's just these tabs are tiny and you're trying to get them into impossible spots, especially once you start folding things up into 3D. And so I got through the head and I was like, man, that took me like 2 hours to do the head. I got to stop. And I didn't come back to it for 2 years. But last week I had the break and I was like, you know, I've been wanting to get into some kind of modeling thing, but I'm bad at painting models and I'm bad at most of the stuff of modeling except for the building. Like I don't want to paint them. I don't want to, you know, do whatever you got to do. And so these things you don't have to paint, right? They're just metal. And so I got back into them and I've been watching this guy on YouTube called World of Wayne is how he pronounces it. He's basically Michael Caine as an Australian Londonite. I don't ask me how this
World
works.
World of Wayne?
World of Wayne.
Did Mike Myers not like have any kind of copyright right. claim on that? Like, I think there's some IP precedent.
Well, I'm assuming the reason he calls it World of Wayne is because he can't call it Wayne's World.
Wayne's World, sure.
But yeah, he builds all kinds of these models, and there are some really cool ones. I went, I did a bad thing that we'll talk about here in a second, but there are some really cool ones he's built. Like he started off with the Millennium Falcon, which is just enormous. Like you can't see me holding my hands up because it's so big and the camera's too close. But it must be like 2 feet across. And he built that thing. He built a really detailed DeLorean model.
When you say built it, cool. He's just builds it like custom kit, like, or he starts with the kit or.
Yeah. So there are these things called buildups. I don't know if that's like an official universal name for it, or if that's just the name that this company uses. The company that made the DeLorean is called Eagle Moss. And they have like these buildup programs where you subscribe and each month you get X amount of packs with X amount of pieces. And then over the course of 2 years or whatever, you have enough, you get all the parts to build this model and you're supposed to do them, you know, piecemeal as you get them. So he built one of those. And the very bad thing that I did is I went and I signed up for one of these things. Because it was just too freaking cool. Okay, let me try and
got
switch.
Some show and tell.
Yeah, got some show and tell, which I didn't prep properly. Here we go. All right, hopefully you can still hear us. So here's what I bought.
This is metal?
This is a die-cast, man. And it's enormous. So it has a detachable saucer.
It's 27 inches long. Yeah. It's almost a yard.
Star Trek USS Enterprise NCC 1701D for people listening to the podcast. It lights up. It's 27 inches long of die-cast metal. This thing's got to weigh, 40 pounds probably?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how thin the metal is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Seems pretty substantial. You get these free gifts, whatever. I don't know. The shirt's kind of cool, I suppose. Huh. But I didn't bother to get this cocaine stand. but I don't know, man. This looks cool. I
You imagine snorting a line off of the Enterprise's dorsal phaser array, that big dark gray, or just like, yeah, yeah, do or the just whole array.
To write off it. The double nacelles.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah. Twin nacelles.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to warp 9.
Yeah, man. Wow. So it's 27.5 inches long, which is too big. This model is too big, but it's really cool. Now, the reason I say it's a mistake to do this is because I didn't realize exactly how much this thing would cost. So they say, okay, well, you get started for $495, right? You're just paying the shipping on these first couple of packs. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And then each month you're going to get, each pack is $12.95 or something, plus a dollar shipping or something like that.
And it's a few more pieces of the parts that you're supposed to, okay.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And it feels like it's going to be a test of patience trying to maintain this thing and build it over the course of 2.5 years, because that's how long it's going to take. But I didn't realize that the $12.95 a month that I thought I was going to pay is actually more like $60 a month, because they send you 4 packs per month. There's like a total of 120 packs all in, or, gotcha, or something like that. So yeah, it might be a mistake. It's going to be very expensive, but you know, you pay for it over time, and it looks like a damn cool model.
It's funny because I built, it's not this exact same model, but it was like half the size, and it was a conventional kind of resin plastic kit by Ertl or whatever. And I put a light kit in, like it was my pride and joy. It's like, because I used to be into pretty big modeling, and I went from the state, like, you know, bought my first model kit and was really displeased at how it was put together, and I got glue everywhere, and I dissolved, like it was a F-14 Tomcat. And it was one of those stage 2 difficulties. So it wasn't like snap together, because I got a snap together kit. I think that was my first one. And those things are just like really shitty in the detail and all that.
Yeah.
So I got the phase 2 one, which is like some cement and paint and decals required.
See.
And I was like 8 or 9, and I got cement everywhere. It, like that stuff, like partially dissolved the stuff, because if you smear, it got smeared on the canopy and clouded it up, and my paint technique
dissolves plastic, so
yeah, that's how it works. It actually
bonds.
Yeah, it dissolves the plastic and fuses it together. So a little bit goes a long way, and you don't want it on visible exposed parts. And I just didn't know anything about painting. It looked like shit. But then when I was 12, I got back into it. I got a Pontiac Banshee. What do you call those? Show car, like, you know, a concept car, this future concept car. And I saw it so sexy. I bought it, and I actually got some spray paint, and I at the time, that was the summer that we had moved back. I must have been like 13 or 14. It's the summer we moved back from Texas, and we were living with my grandparents for like 3 months until we got our house together in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And my granddad, I've mentioned before, is a fabulous craftsman. So he's like, well, you got to prime it, and you got to do this, you got to do that. So like, he showed me the basics of how to get a good paint job, and I got this gloss black paint job, and I got the chrome all looking good, and I kind of got the bug, and I started building like cars and planes. So by the time I got to the Enterprise, I'd had like a year or two, and I made that thing right, and I put lights in it, and my sister destroyed it.
Because
she was like 7 or 8, and she walked in my room, and she liked playing with my toys, and my mom had this thing where it's like, her idea was like, well, you should always let her play with it regardless, because it's just stuff, you know? Like, it's just things. Yeah, I get that. You want to teach, but when you got one kid that's 7, one kid that's 14, there needs to be some supervision there. So my sister's blood just went in there, and I came in, and the saucer had been separated from the battle section, but not where it's
designed to do. Okay.
Yeah, like at the neck, not at the cobra head. And I was really pissed, and my mom told me to essentially pan. And that kind of, like, I didn't put together models until I was an adult, because I was like, well, fuck this. I'm not gonna have a bunch of nice things laying around my sister can tear up.
Damn.
That's going to look slick
and modeling. Like, the reason I like this kit is because, and the reason I like these Metal Earth ones is because there is no gluing required, because I'm bad at the gluing. I'm bad at the painting. I'm terrible at the decals. These fucking water decals they have that go on these models it seems like it's shitty and bad, but this thing is going to like screw together for the most part, because it's die cast. So
I got pretty good at the decals, but man, these Space Marine guys come with a whole bunch of decals you're supposed to put on like their kneecaps and their shoulder pauldrons, and they're all the size of like your pinky nail on your toe. And it's like, yeah, that's going to be that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so how long will it take for you to how long will it take to ship all the stuff that you need to build it? Like is it years. A 4 month project? No, seriously?
Yeah, you get shipped over the course. So let me see what the FAQ has to say about it. So the FAQ says, what will I receive each month? You get 4 kits per month. How many model kits? It's 120 model kits. So, you know, it's 30 months, which is 2.5 years.
For one model?
Uh-huh.
Holy
That's
shit.
What I mean. It's going to be a test of patience. Okay. Just like getting the Varts. I don't know if I'll build them in batches and just like, you know, forget about it for 6 months and then build it all, spend 5 hours building those parts or what. But
sounds like what they want you is like, you know, like waiting by your mailbox on Friday. So when you get it, you're like, yeah, I'm going to sit down here and kit this thing together. Yeah.
I'm sure for the first few, like they haven't even shipped I think I ordered this right before we went on break. Sometime in March, the end of March. So it hasn't been shipped yet, but hopefully soon.
My spring break was dominated by the big camping trip that I alluded to, where I took Jack up to the Indian Staircase. We did the dry run the week before, and the only difference is when we got to the top of the staircase, we went right to like kind of the more unexplored territory instead of the regular loop. And about a quarter mile off of that, we found this fantastic campsite that had this big clearing that overlooked the gorge, because there's like a 400-foot drop off from the top of the cliff to the floor below. And you can see to the other side of the canyon rim. And I knew it because there's going to be a full moon that night. And I'm like, man, I really want to see this fucker lit up by the moonlight. You know, when I look out of my hammock, I want to see that. So we did that. We got at our campsite at about 1:30, 2 o'clock, and kind of got things set up. I built a tripod for the first time out of just forest materials, with a little hook that I could hang my water pail and boil water, out of. And we got our hammock slung with a little tarp over them. And my sister got us these under quilts. So like I think I talked about this before, but like the problem with a hammock in cool weather is that like everything that keeps you warm outside depends on loft, you know, like down jackets are so good because they take up a lot of space, they're big and puffy, and that traps air, which traps heat, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're laying on a hammock, you compress all that stuff down and it leads to what they call cold butt syndrome. An underquilt is the solution to that problem, which is essentially a sleeping bag that slings underneath your hammock. Like it's a second hammock that hangs underneath your hammock that wraps your body with like some kind of lofted material. And these things worked like a champ. It got down to about 36 degrees that night, which was about 7 to 8 degrees colder than they called for. And me and Jack were toasty warm just with the underquilt and our sleeping bags. It was a great time. As a special treat, I brought a little 8-inch tablet that I preloaded with The Ritual, Blair Witch Project, and Predator. Because Jack has turned into a big horror movie fan, and we were talking about like it'd be so cool to like watch something from the people screaming in terror from things in the woods genre while we were in the pitch black woods, and it was great. I ran a line so it go over our sleeping our hammocks, and then I had this like this little like I don't know, it's kind of like a big bread twist. Mm-hmm. Like a big rubber bread twist that I twisted around the thing so I could hang it up on the string. And we were able to watch that. We didn't get to we watched Predator. We didn't watch any of the other two movies. Jack was a big fan of that. Yeah. I tried out my filtration system, which worked pretty good, except for. So I showed Jack how to use it. And as you know, when there's like about a quarter mile away from our campsite, there's this natural spring just came out of the ground. And I had this gallon bag. So this filtration system is essentially a gallon kind of like Mylar bag with a handle on it. And at the bottom, it's got the screw with like a little tube, and you plug in one of those like essentially life straw type, you know, like they'd get the nanotube filters, you know, filters down to 0.0001 micron or whatever. And you just dangle that thing into like a clean container, and it just gravity forces the water through there, and it'll filter like that gallon over the course of 10, 15 minutes. So you gotta have to babysit it. Because this came out of the ground, I can only get the bag to fill up like halfway. So I used my empty water container to fill up the rest. And so we went back to the campsite. I showed him like, well, here, since this is contaminated glass, I'm putting some hand sanitizer in there, and I'm swishing it around, and I'm sanitizing it, and I'm cleaning it out. And then now we can put clean water into it. And on subsequent things, I let him be the water guy, you know, because we went through like 2-3 gallons of water, and he did not observe the sanitation step on my cup. On subsequent ones. And I got a little bit of a stomach bug the night we came back. Not like Yikes. Major, but like I had the Hershey squirts for like a solid 16 hours.
In the woods, that's...
No, it didn't hit me until I started feeling bad on the long hike home. and because it was like a 3-mile hike to get back to our car. And I was like, God, dude, I'm feeling terrible. I feel like shit. I'm kind of dehydrated because of the thing that started happening to me. And by the time I got home, I had stopped like 3 times on the way home, too. By the time I got home, I was just pounding ginger ale and stuff to settle my stomach. I'd taken like those chewy Pepto tablets, and I was most of the way fine by that night. But it was great, man. We had dinner. Oh, I brought these ribeye steaks. We just cooked right. I had this like foldable grill I could put over on the logs and the coal, and we just cooked on that. And we had instant mashed potatoes I made with the water, and that was really good. After we had that, we went out to the clearing and just looked at stars for like 30 minutes because the stars down there are just phenomenal. Like, it's pretty dark sky. And then we came back and we watched Predator. And then by that time, the full moon had rose and we made some s'mores and went out and spent another 30 minutes just kind of looking at how bright, you know, just looking at the moonlight valley and all that stuff. And by then it was like getting close to midnight. So we went to bed. But yeah, it was a great time. It was a great time. I hear that in 2022, they're planning on closing the gorge, the Red River Gorge, up a bit more. Like right now, you need an overnight permit to park, but like they don't give a fuck where you camp. There's really very little restrictions other than you're not supposed to cut down live wood. And there's campsites everywhere. Like if you get 500 foot off a trail, you're going to just start seeing clusters of fire pits and stuff where people have gone and bit. So I guess there's concern this place is getting so popular, they're going to start doing like some kind of lottery system where there's only so many slots open each day and you have to reserve them out. And, you know, they're designated spots. Like you can't just go wherever you want. You have to go to this spot. That's something that I guess are putting up to a vote. And I guess it's a bummer because I just found out about this place and it is really cool to just find your own spot and camp. But like I can also see thousands of people doing that, just wrecking the place. And I guess that's what's happening. And it's crazy. Like there's some crazy vandalism on some of the rock structures that you see, and it's always a shame. And I guess there's just been like 3 pretty big forest fires in the last 5 years, but for people like being irresponsible with fire. So I get it, but it's one of those things where it kind of sucks because it's like you found a cool spot right before it became the most popular place and then got closed down by the Board of Health because it had a roach problem. But
it's a shame.
But
you know, better to limit the number of people than to just
start planning my trips. The thing that sucks about that is like you can plan your trip out 6 months, but like when you get to your weekend and it's going to rain all weekend, do you fucking go and be miserable, or do you just say, well, fuck, maybe next year? That's the only thing that sucks about it, because if this doesn't work this weekend, you go next weekend.
Almost any vacation, though, like, you know, going to Italy, it's not ideal that it rained half my trip the first time I was there, but.
That's true. Or if you go to the beach and it rains all the time.
Yeah. Anything.
If only the outdoors had like an arcade or a museum or something you could do.
We just need to
out from underneath a flimsy tarp. You know,
we need to biodome one area and just make that the vacation area and just have like Vegas. Let's just biodome Vegas like they did in Godzilla vs. Kong. which I didn't understand. Godzilla vs. Kong, why do they biodome him? And then, like, when he starts, like, having ill effects from the biodome, they're like, oh, he's not going to survive here much longer. We got to move him. Why don't you just take down the fucking biodome? Because he lived there for many, many, many years. Totally fine before you put up this fucking artificial sunlight stuff.
Because they woke Godzilla, and once Godzilla is awoken, he has some instinctual need to find every other alpha on the planet and kill them. So, like, they knew that if Godzilla or Kong was unprotected.
Okay.
Maybe at the end, after they've hate fucked.
Yeah, I know. But he's
there's a concern that Godzilla would come and nuke him, and then it's like a preservation kind of thing. But
sure. I don't know why Godzilla can't bust through your shitty biodome. But okay.
I think he could have. That's what my question is. It's like, come on, this is not Truman in the Truman Show. He's like 300 foot tall. You just punch right through this thing. Come on. I think that they implied that he stayed there because of the little girl. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, this sucks for keeping me here. And I'm going to throw a sequoia through your dome every day just to keep track of time. But I just want you to know. You get rid of the deaf girl and I'm out of here.
So she's a prisoner on Skull Island just because Kong needs to stay there?
I don't know. I think that's kind of sort of. I think she was, I understood she was adopted from the Skull Island tribe. There's a lot. Yeah. And you kind of got to know, you have to pay more attention than you want to like Kong Skull Island and Godzilla. Yeah, right. Yeah, they're really in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation there.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you had a good
shit make sense.
Vacation.
She's the last of Skull Island tribe. There you go. That's just what I thought. Yeah. And I played a decent amount of video games too. I watched a bunch of stuff. I got on a Kira Kurosawa kick, as I alluded to in the last OTC. Looking forward to watching another one this weekend. We were going to go camping. Me and Cecily are going to go camping because it was just me and Jack last weekend. We were going to go camping, just us, but it's going to rain all day tomorrow. So I think, since now Nicole has him for 2 weeks in a row, we're going to go. Next week is supposed to be pretty cold, but pretty. I think I'm going to go to REI tonight and look for another backpack because my backpack is a little too small for me. It's perfect for Cecily. So I'm going to get a larger backpack for myself. So what was the other thing I wanted? I don't know. So I'm looking into trekking poles.
Just like everyone like swears sticks sort of thing.
Yeah, but they're like the technical ones. They're like lightweight and collapsible, and they're supposed to help you with like climbing down things and also like spreading the weight from your shoulders to, you know, when you're trekking over, like, I don't know, this guy I was talking about that I'm camping with in a couple weeks were like singing their praises. So I'm like, oh, I'll go check. But they're fucking expensive. Like they start like you can get shitty ones at Dick's for like $40, but like I already know I'm not going to do that. So it's like the next level up is like $90 to $100, and you can spend as much as $300 for walking sticks.
Yeah, what amounts to a stick?
They got some of them have suspension systems,
like shock absorbers.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Shock absorbers. Yeah. Carbon fiber. It's crazy shit, man.
Inertial dampeners.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, will it blow people's minds if I just bring like a roll of like what do they call that? Tennis racket handle grip. And I just like grab two saplings and wrapped it. It's like, there's my walking sticks. I paid $4 for the grip.
Yeah.
When I'm done, I'll throw them back in the forest after I de-grip them.
Why not?
But we'll see. See people in chat saying I already got some trek pole evangelist here, Ryan. Like I said, I'm gonna look into them, but $100, it's a lot, and I've gotten a lot of hiking done without using them, so we'll see. I'm sure it's one of those things where once you get them, it's like, oh yeah, you can't go without them. But yeah, it's a nice break. Also, best part is I got Jack's grades from his last quarter. He's because I talked about the you know, it's been a struggle with the remote learning, especially when we first got into it. But he's back. He's had high honor roll the last two quarters. So I'm really proud of the work he's doing and the work that I've done to get him to do the work that he's been doing.
Oh, I thought you meant all the problems on his homework that you've done for him.
That's what I'm. Yeah, that and just a constant checking up and like kind of finding the right strategy of like not hectoring him, but also, you know, keeping an eye and motivation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so carrot and stick.
this kid wants to work this summer. He's 14 years old and he wants to, like, last year he mowed lawns and this year he wants to work at, like, get a job at Kroger's or something. And I'm like, and I was the exact fucking same way when I was a kid. I could not wait to start earning a paycheck and getting my own money. And he's just like me and just like my dad. I'm like, why? You're going to do this literally the rest of your fucking life, kid. Like, enjoy your, but, you know, he sees it as, like, a way to get money, a way to socialize. He loves feeling like an adult, too. Like, it's very satisfying for him to feel like he's got his own stuff, and that's part of it, too. But, like, holy hell, literally, you're going to work until you die, probably.
You have plenty of time. Just milk this kid thing for the next 4 years, and then go be an adult. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you never know that when you're a kid. I remember feeling the same thing when I was a kid. Not that I wanted to get a job, but that I wanted to get my independence, certainly. So I get it.
That I understand.
But now, you know, 39-year-old me would say, what the fuck were you doing? Just stay a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. C drive. I'm in that boat. Got those grades up. Good. Just got to do it, man. Got to do it. I can't wait. He'll be back in school, I'm sure, this fall.
What grade are you in, C drive?
Is your dad taking in for an ice cream later?
Yeah, I knew he had some young listeners. I didn't know they were that young.
All right. Do we have anything else we want to talk about? We've been chatting for a while, and we got like a 2-week backlog of questions, so maybe we should get to it.
Yeah, let's do it.
As always, my disclaimer, if you'd like to get your questions in for lunch, for answers, or just contribute to the discussion, there's two ways to do it. You can tweet hashtag bald lunch, or you can get on the VIP section of the forums. They ever let you log on and post there's a lunch thread every Monday that gets posted, and we round them all up here and we talk about it. So there we go. Vision says, happy lunchaholics. Happy lunch. Whether it'd be lunchaholic, there seems like there's an addiction. I mean, people have to eat.
Audience. Yeah.
Yeah. People have to eat. If you're addicted to eating, must be a bitch.
I can't go a day without lunch.
Hope y'all had an awesome spring break. Thank you. We did. I went back and watched Breaking Bad again, in part because of your guys' back catalog fill strategy. When I got to season 4, I have an observation. Season 4, Breaking Bad, Jim and Aaron were totally different guys. 2011, Jim laughs more, has a different energy. You guys both seem like you're having a lot of fun without the weight of the last decade. I'm sure grade A television helped too. This got me thinking, in the same way as Breaking Bad is a story of a character evolution in response to hardships and situations, you guys have changed too in the face of all the shit you've been through. While I doubt there are barrels of acidic pinkish goo in the old bald tower or Hogwarts offices, well, it's striking to hear the differences of you guys from this simpler time. If you could ride down to the Circle K and hop in the time traveling phone booth, what wisdom would you impart to 2011 Jim and Aaron? Buy Bitcoin. Buy lots of Bitcoin.
I mean, mine was going to be, save money. not like I haven't been trying. I don't know. I feel like since the beginning of the Bald New experiment, I've been trying to, get my financial life in order, but that, Bald Move has taken a toll on that, certainly. It's like, well, I started to make some progress on that, and then we decided to go full-time with Bald Move, and that progress got wiped off the map.
Same.
And then I'm, eventually started building it back up, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm actually getting there too. Like, I'm a year or two behind you on the progress, but like, I feel like I'm starting to finally make some headway, and the savings are going up, and I'm starting investing again, and
a lot more expenses than I do as well.
Yeah.
Which has always sucked.
What do you think about this? Like, you laughed more, you had a different energy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good energy or bad energy. Like, that's also part of it. Yeah.
Like, we were both like extraordinarily fit in that period too. Like, I felt like I could whip Wildcat's ass, man.
Yeah, I haven't worked out in like 10 years. So back then I was in very good shape. And I just plain had a lot more energy. Also, I had seen less TV. I had seen fewer movies. I feel like I'm losing some of the joy of seeing new things because I don't see as many new things because I've seen so much now. So, yeah, I feel like back then it was all so new and shiny, and I was like excited and thrilled to just be talking into a microphone. Now I do that every single day of my life. It's not anything special, but
Yeah, it's more job energy than hobby energy.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But I will say, I think that's something I always admired about Roger Ebert, is that he, throughout his long career, really still seemed to be tickled by, you know, new stuff. But he also, I don't think, ever lost appreciation for just kind of like a garden variety average stuff, too.
Yeah.
And that's tough, because like I tend to, like, when you see a thing and you see a later, like 5 years later, you see the same thing just with a different cast or like a different location, it's hard to get as excited about it, right? I don't know. I don't know how to counteract that. I mean, I don't feel like I'm a different person, but like, sure, yeah, I'm 10 years older. Like, I got a lot more like care and weight on me, I guess. I'm a lot more in tune with, like, you know, how I can affect people with how I say things and how I cover things. And that's more in the back of my mind than it used to be. So, but yeah, mostly it'd be fine, because I don't know that I'd do anything different in the last 10 years. And everything I would have done different would be covered by just investing Bitcoin, because we'd have several million dollars and we would just be playing with house money, and who gives a fuck?
That's like the thing. I think the advice would be to make this more on our terms. You know, if you are going to make it into a job, do so knowing that this is going to last over 10 years, right? Because back then I didn't know if this was going to last a long time, and I didn't know what kind of mode it would be in for the next 10 years. We had a lot of ideas of like, okay, we're going to, you know, do this podcast thing and it's going to get more and more popular, hopefully, and we're going to make more and more money, hire some people in to help us out with it. I didn't realize that we'd be stuck in sort of two man hobby business mode for this long. And, you know, working as hard on that as we have been for the last 10 years. And that's the thing that's taken its toll, is not having really defined this early on and said, okay, this is what the business is going to be, in a way that it actually turned out to be that. So I would probably tell myself, like, look, you've got at least 10 more years ahead of you on this. Turn this into the business that is the one that you want it to be. Don't try to, like, turn it into something that it can't become. Because I think I would be a lot more at peace with, like, the workload and stuff if I started early on kind of shaping it into that.
And also invest in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that would have solved, like you said, all the problems.
Yeah. We were buying them. I remember when we slowed down, it's like, oh, Bitcoin's about $175, man. Maybe we should slow down on how much we're spending on it, because, God, it's got to be topping out. And now it's 60,000. Yeah. Yeah, that would have solved literally all the only problems I've had, the only significant problems. Oh, that's not even true. But the easily solvable problems I've had in the last decade were money problems, and that would have solved it. So everything else, pretty much, you know, the other thing is, like, I feel like the world in general is kind of an unsettled, like, it's hard to find people that are just like happy go lucky about everything, that are paying attention. And I've always been someone that kind of paid attention. So, anyway, let's see. He says, at any rate, thanks for these years of entertainment and excitement and insight. Continue being excellent to one another. Well, we'll try. Okay. Let's see. Jennifer S. Well, Michelle, you're saying that now, but when Bitcoin is $300,000 18 months from now, you'll be singing a different tune. But
I mean, that's the problem. It's 54, like, you know.
Like, I've said this a million times, but like the first time I heard of Bitcoin, it was like 11 cents. And I thought, huh, I should buy like $1,000 for this, because why the fuck not? Second time I heard about it, it was a dollar. The third time I thought about it, it was 10. When I started buying it, it was like $75 to $90. And when I stopped buying, it was $350. And now it's 60,000 or whatever the hell it is. So,
yeah,
I don't know. To the moon, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be talking about Bitcoin later, because someone's got some more questions. Jennifer S. Rodriguez. I don't watch The Walking Dead, but I do enjoy your podcast. One of those types, eh?
Wild.
The intro music is awesome. Is it original to you? And I'd love to get it as a ringtone. Jim, take it away.
Yeah, that's my brother's band. We said, hey, we're doing a podcast. And we didn't I'm trying to remember what theme music did we have for the podcast we did before this? Because we just did Breaking Bad and was it Game of Thrones? And we had some weird like rap song on Game of Thrones. I don't know. Oh, we didn't have any original stuff.
It was the heavy metal version.
Oh,
of,
yeah.
We had the Arya's Prayer when we went through the Night's Watch rebranding.
Yeah. And so when we launched this, we were like, you know what? We need some good music, some stuff that's like the stuff that my brother's band does would be cool for this particular podcast. So we just, you know, called him up and said, hey, you want to make a song for this? And he was like, yeah, sure. And that's what they came up with. He's no longer part of that band. It's a band called Mysteriana. You could probably still find their music online. I'm not even sure if the website exists anymore. Because it was him and his friend, and they just stopped doing the band. So,
where do you get the track? Because there used to be on the you can find all their music on Mysteriana. Yeah, maybe we should post like a link to the track or something, because I don't, you know, I mean, I'd love.
Yeah, I mean, the website is down, so you definitely can't still get that. I think I have the full track.
I definitely have it because I've been using it to score like our stereo ads and some of the other stuff we've been doing.
Yeah,
I agree. It's fucking.
I can release that, but.
Back in the old days, we used to like listen to, you know, the intros and outros, you know, like we'd do it live. And I used to really get pumped, you know, yeah, it's pretty sweet. Good music your brother made. Mm-hmm. Didn't you? I thought one of our podcasts was just you playing a couple of chord progressions on a acoustic guitar.
Yeah, the first Zombie Drill episodes, I did that.
Oh, Zombie. I couldn't remember Zombie Drill or Season 4 of Breaking Bad.
I thought it was Zombie Drill, but maybe not. You might be right.
Man, Gnarls, I liked Arya's Prayer too, Gnarls in chat saying, but like that was a very divisive because we had this like fucking sweet ass dubstep, djent kind of like chunky. And then we went to Arya's Prayer and it was like whiplash. It's like, you know, turning on, you know, DMX when Beavis and Butthead are in the, they're like, you know, they're not going to like it.
Yeah.
So then I think we zigged and into the what we're using now, which is the Highway Superstar stuff, which everyone seemed to like, you know, it hits that Gen X nostalgia. Okay, moving on to Greenback. I just started the first book in the Master and Commander series, which I know Aaron is a big fan of. Correct. How long did it take you before you stopped looking up every fifth word in the dictionary and just went with it? I'm currently 134 pages in, but it's taken me ages to get here because I'm scared that if I don't know what a Tompion is or what antediluvian means, I'll flounder like a lubbard at the main tap gallant staysails. Here's the thing. When I first talked about this, I encouraged everyone to just treat that like techno babble. Do you pause an episode of Star Trek every time Wesley Crusher says he's going to inverse the benzine ring of the Bassard ram scoop? No. Those are just highly technical terms. They give a veneer of, now it is rewarding on Master and Commander because all that shit does mean something, but like you are not supposed to understand what's going on. You are supposed to be like, Dr. Maturin, who is a landlubber and has constantly, like even 20 books in a series have to have basic sailing things explained to him. He is the audience surrogate. Jesus Christ, I just fell off of my stool here. If you have to have something explained to him, there will be a character that will explain it to the Steven so that you will understand it. But it also makes the second time, because around book three or four, you'll start to understand, like you'll get your port and your starboard and your bow and your aft and all your different like levels of masts and staysails and cannons and all that stuff. And it's rewarding reading those first few books, which are a lot more heavily into like fleet engagements and ship to ship engagements, because the battles really do come to life when you understand them more.
Part of that, how do you ever mentally map starboard and port in your head?
What do you mean by mentally?
Like I could do it if I was watching a movie and they're like pointing off to the left side or whatever it is. I don't know starboard and port, but they're pointing off to the left.
That's
and they say, hit the starboard cannons or whatever. How do you do that in a book?
It's a good question, because it's mostly it's like in sense of motion. Like, you know that like Jack is chasing the ship, and when he's like hard about, you know, he's turning around, and when he's straight in, like it's more of like, is he coming or going? Is the other ship coming and going? Is it broadside to you or run, or like is it presenting you the it's aft set? So it's like more of that. It's yeah. But then, you know, there's a lot of stuff like anticipation, like if, you know, Jack tells the people to do such and such and such to sails and such with the rudder, you know, he's about to do something before the book will tell you. And also there's a book called Sea of Words, which is a companion that has it's a dictionary of all the terms used with their definition, but also has a lot of good visuals, like the anatomy of a ship. It has some of the voyages planted out because there's a couple of times where I thought he was in South America. He's actually off the coast of Africa, because I'm not aware of all the different islands and coasts and stuff. So there's a lot of like atlas things that if you want to follow the different voyages that they go on. So if you really want to do that, you can. I really encourage you to just get in the treat it like a Star Trek episode and don't sweat the details and trust that O'Brien is going to pull you through, because he usually does. Because all the stuff that's good about that series is like the personal relationships and like the private jokes between Steven and Jack, you know, the fact that Steven is an eternal landlubber and he never understands anything on sea. And Jack is the opposite. He's a consummate seaman that's completely taken advantage of when he's on land. He always is losing his money and his fortune because he's an idiot. It's all that stuff that's fun.
As someone who doesn't know these terms myself, explain to me this, because I always assumed the landlubber literally is a bad pronunciation of land lover. Am I wrong about that? Is lubber a thing?
Lubbered is like a slovenly or disorganized person. So like if you handle it in a lubberly fashion, then you're like, it's poor seamanship. So like a land lubber is like a like double plus ungood.
Right. It's, you know, someone from land like, who's just worthless on a boat. Okay.
And there might be a more precise, but there's all kinds, like another thing they call land lubbers is grass combers, like implying that you're a farmer. They have no concept of farming or any kind of gainful employment beyond the government sanctioned piracy they're engaged in. So there's a lot of shit like that where they're always making negative aspersions on people who's, you know, make their money on the land versus the water. Hmm. But the other question is, would it be worth reading a few novels before watching a 2003 movie? Or are they not connected? No, it's actually super rewarding. You could do it either way, because the movie is just is like a jukebox collection of like the greatest scenes in the first three novels or so, with the bare bone skeleton of the basic plot of the 11th serving as the backbone. But like you'll get a lot more of the inside jokes, and you'll like, you know, Killick has got like three lines, but they're fucking gold if you know who Killick is in the books and some of the other guys. And you'll be outraged by how fucking miscast Bonden is. Jesus Christ. You have a hobbit playing the three-time fleet boxing champion. Like this physical, like it's like Adrian Brody playing Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's exactly what it is. Anyway, WNC and me says, I'm also very excited that another person starting a voyage. Kuda, I'm jealous. I wish I could go back and I wish I could erase my knowledge of the series and read it again fresh. It's a good one. WC and me, do you know what your next full coverage TV podcast will be? Whew.
Like returning or new, right? Not just
yeah, because it's going to be Walking Dead almost certainly. I don't know. Now it's back in August. It find it hard to believe we won't find some kind of prestige thing to cover. I'm just kind of waiting. I will say that like if I'd known how good For All Mankind was, I would have been very tempted to do full coverage of that because, oh my God, I just watched the first three episodes of season two.
I haven't seen them yet.
So good, man. It's so good. It's like in like all those questions we had about like, man, how are they going to handle the time skip? Like 5 minutes into the first episode, fuck, you don't even think about it. It's perfect. It's crazy. I really like that show. I don't know what the first prestige is coming out. I've kind of got my ear to the ground. I keep on looking. I don't want to force something too, because we're also very busy And like, if you, you know, there's going to be a ton of shit coming down the pike, and it's a lot of it's pulp.
That's the thing I keep hearing, shows that are coming back, getting, you know, dates, or not like hard dates, but like soft dates of like 2022 or, you know, fall of 2021. I guess Book of Boba Fett recently got an actual date. Pretty sure we're going to be talking about that. So yeah. I don't know. Until Walking Dead comes back, we don't have anything on the schedule yet, but that's coming back in just a few short months. So
yeah. Yeah. And like I said, we're going to fill the prestige with movies and stuff, classic, you know, pre-release movies. The first run stuff is coming back. But as far as a good prestige show to come back to, I haven't seen one in I haven't seen one yet, but we're definitely keeping our ear to the ground. We're also like, you know, we're going to be recording next week or two a big Everything We Know About the Game of Thrones Prequels podcast. Because that's going to be coming down in 2022. That's definitely going to be a first cover. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of people asking us about these questions. As we'll get to here. Joe Butler Potter says, watching X-Files from the start on Disney Plus. I did not know the X-Files was all on Disney. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The conspiracy theorizing plays differently in 2021. Yeah, doesn't it?
Is that a Fox thing? Question. Is that why that's on Disney Plus?
Is Disney and Fox connected?
Yeah, didn't Disney buy 20th Century Fox?
I didn't. Oh, maybe they did. Is that how they got the X-Men?
I thought they did, yeah.
Would Mulder get the COVID vaccine?
Probably not. Wait, wasn't there something about that in the new...
I was going to say, he was big into the black oil vaccine. Like, that was what they wanted to get, like a vaccine to keep people from getting mind controlled. So, like...
Okay.
I think
he would.
He's one of the ones that... He's not an anti-vaxxer. He's just skeptical about this vaccine. Because, you know...
Yeah, I mean,
FEMA rushed it out as a result of cross corn and bee hybridization experiments, and it's just got the smoking man's nicotine stained fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, I think you'd get it. And then Joel McHale would be the one delivering it.
I think Scully would bully him into it, because she'd give him this speech about, like, I'm a fucking medical doctor, you son of a bitch. And I have, you know, and like, if you, you know, you got to shit on the work of all the world's great scientists and doctors. And yeah, I think she would not let him get away with not getting it.
You're not going to make me do your autopsy, are you, when you die of this thing? Get the vaccine.
Omri. A close relative of mine just got Silicon Valley IPO rich. I'm guessing $20 to $30 million after taxes rich. It's pretty impressive.
Congrats.
We're in a very good relationship. We meet about once a week. We always celebrate special occasions together. We share mutual hobbies. He's offered to give me $300,000 as a gift. I'm very grateful. This will not exactly change my life, though. But I'm very far away from having fuck you money. And as a young family, every dollar counts. Our relationship most probably will change, and I'm not sure how. Do you have a rich friend? Should I accept the gift and forever be in his debt? If I will accept it, should I meet his new standard of living, such as more high-end restaurants, luxury vacation spots, etc.? What would you do in my place?
No, don't do that. Wow, that's a tough question.
I don't know that I've ever known anybody this far. Like, it'd been friends. Like, I've had casual acquaintances that are pretty high up in the income and in the not even, this isn't income. You're talking wealth here. Mm-hmm. And I used to back when I was a witness and I was a pioneer, because I was very poor, and there was a wealthy people that, you know, they like to look after the poor pioneers. That's the people that knock on doors like a 90-100 hours a month or whatever. And a Bethelite, who's the guy, one of these guys, young men that work at the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, was visiting the congregation. We were kind of talking about this. And he said that the philosophy at Bethel, because they have to take a vow of poverty, they get like a $10 allowance a week or whatever, and they get their room and board paid for. But everything else comes from the kindness of the brothers and sisters. And their philosophy was always accept, never expect. And I think that is a good guidance. Like, you can accept people's generosity, but don't ever expect it or feel like you're entitled to it. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep that going, and also don't feel like there's and also he is, just because he's giving you $300,000 does not mean he's entitled to your time or attention. So like, he wants to go like on a $30,000 cruise and I don't know, fucking the Gulf of Arabia or whatever. Don't feel like you have to do that because he gave you $300,000 a while back. But I also think it's sad because I've got firsthand experience of some friends of mine. You know, it's like this is dealt with in like the show Friends. Like, some, they all started dirt poor, right? Some of them became doctors and paleontologists and software engineers, and some of them were still struggling artists and musicians. And that started to have a friction, you know, because the people that had money wanted to start eating at the nice restaurants and taking the nice vacations. And that's a thing that you got to square that yourself. Like, I guess if I was in friends like that and I had a wealthy friend and they're willing to like take me along to the finer things and they wanted my company because I've always been there with them, I'd probably accept that. But if it's weird, will it get weird? I don't know. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. And it probably depends on the person who's doing the giving. Most likely.
And accepting.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, yeah, certainly. But I don't know, man. This, it feels weird to me that someone would just want to gift you an amount of money that large without sort of expecting anything from it. But I mean, I don't know, because I might do that with my family, or, you know, what I have left of a family if I ever got that kind of money. Like,
if I got $50 million, I'd be hard pressed not to like break off a little something for you, because I would, like my intimate friends, I don't want them to have to worry about money anymore.
Yeah, yeah, I would, you know, like to think I would do the same thing, but I don't know this person, like, because I think a lot of people aren't like that, right? A lot of people would give this money and expect something in return, or like you can certainly see it, like, you know, like coming up every other year being like, hey, we're going on this vacation. It's going to cost $15,000. Take a week off work and let's go do this. And you're like, well, no, yeah, I can't get time off work, or I don't have that. That's a lot of money or something. And they're like, what? I gave you $300,000. It's not like you can't afford it.
Yeah.
I can see that kind of person. Yeah. Being a real pain in this situation. So,
but then I also make this observation: taking the money could change the relationship. Turning the money down can also change the relationship. Like, if you reject this very generous gift that they're giving of free will, like that, like, you know, like sometimes that can be offensive. If you do something nice for someone and they turn it down because in their self-image, they don't want to take charity or whatever, that can kind of be a bummer too.
I don't know. Take like the money, keep a running tally of everything that they ask you to spend money on. And when it hits $300,000, say you're cut off. No, I don't know. I don't know. In the meantime, invest it and make money off it.
That's another idea. You can take it, invest it. So like, you've got, it's returning $15,000-$30,000. And then like, there's your vacation budget for your wealthy person. But like, I don't know, like I said, there's all types of people. Some people are really generous and some people just want their, but like, you know, the other thing is like, if I got rich quickly, the hell of that is like, how do you trust people? Like, there is a reason why people tend to trust the people that have been with them for the entire trip, because they know that you like them for who they are and not for what they can do for you. So like, whereas everybody else might be hangers on or, you know, gold digging and all that kind of stuff, like, they know you have a value that to their as like a long term friend, you know. So like, yeah, I just have a hard time turning at $300,000. I mean, you know, it doesn't change your life, but like, that is a pretty big chunk of change. That's your kids going to college full boat ride if you have three of them.
I mean, you know? if you stick that in investments for 20 years, that's your retirement. Like,
your retirement account. Done. Yeah, done. Like, that is like, I find it hard to believe, unless you're already fairly up into the upper class, like, that's not life changing money. Like, that's life changing money for, like, if you had $1 million in a bank, that's still pretty life changing money. Or, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
But yeah, it depends on your relationship with this person, sweat it.
Right? Like, yeah. That's the thing. If you think the relationship can withstand any kind of weirdness that's potentially going to happen from this, go ahead and do it. Because, yeah, I would have a very hard time saying no to just no strings attached, you know, quote unquote, no strings attached, $300,000.
And there's strings attached, fuck them. Then they revealed their truce, and then you got you're morally off the hook for taking it, you know?
About turning it down, yeah. But,
And the other thing is, like chat saying, like, you don't want to be like Walter and turn down the Schwartz's money. Like, yeah, what if Walter just accepted the generosity?
2 years from now, you could be cooking meth. You don't know.
Right. But he had a bug up his ass. Didn't want to rely on charity. Didn't want to, you know, I don't know. There's like lots of different ways to look at it. I guess what is the healthy way to look at it? You know, and like a healthy from your, because you can't control the other person. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have bad motives, good motives. They could start with good motives. Money corrupts. Like, who knows? But like, as long as you make the decisions from a healthy perspective, trust the other person to be an adult, you can rarely go. You'll rarely turn out looking like an asshole. But
yeah.
Okay, Jason G. Happy Friday, Jason. In previous Bitcoin discussions, you guys mentioned the mining process, but haven't gone too much in depth. What exactly is the process? What is the blockchain? Are there unlimited Bitcoins to be mined? What's the energy consumption concerns? Is there like a 3-minute, like...
There's a 3-year course you could take at MIT if you want to. I don't fucking know, man. This has been like the bane of my Bitcoin existence for the longest time, just figuring out what the fuck the blockchain is.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, it is a ledger of transactions. That is really all it is. It's a way to encrypt. It's not even encryption. It's just like,
well, that's the thing. It uses it's like a transaction ledger, like a spreadsheet. But it's underlying. There's cryptography underlying, which means that it can be both public and yet uneditable.
Right.
Like, if someone tried to edit the transaction, the cryptographic hashes wouldn't match, and you could reject it as an obvious fraud. So it's something that you can just do right in public, and everyone can verify it through the cryptographic means, but no one can. And there's a big fucking asterisk in there, because there's also like, if you have a certain percentage of the total, like if some one person had a certain percentage of the blockchain calculation, then they could in fact inject false information. And I think there's been a few, two or three panics where in the early days there was a miner that was going for like that 51% thing. And I don't know what they did, but yeah, that's essentially it. It's just a record of what's happened historically that can't be changed because it's got some cryptographic protections on top of it.
Right.
And that's where all the problems come from, because cryptography, advanced cryptography, takes a lot of computer power to process. And that's where the energy consumption comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You do these crazy long cryptographic problems to mine a Bitcoin. And there are a limit. There is a finite limit of Bitcoins, is why the way I understand it. But there's certain epochs where, like, when a certain number of Bitcoins are mined, which is essentially solving a cryptograph. It's like, imagine if you solved the crossword puzzle and every crossword puzzle was worth a Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
After, you're like, oh, what a great deal. You do 100 crossword puzzles. We've entered a new epoch. Now you have to submit 10 crossword puzzles to get one Bitcoin. Still a pretty good deal. Well, after you do 1,000, the next new epoch, now you got to do 100 crossword puzzles for that Bitcoin. That's how Bitcoin works. So theoretically, there's a finite number of crossword puzzles in the Bitcoin blockchain equation type of thing. But as you mine more and more, it gets harder and harder. You have to do more and more work to get those Bitcoins out. So it's kind of like, I think they tried to model a real life demand, like if you're mining gold out of the ground, like, you know, like they're trying to put a economic curve in like that.
Yeah.
And there is the other energy expenditure, because you have to do more and more work. You have to have more and more supercomputers crunching these things to get fractional bits of Bitcoin out of the ground, which is burning up a ton of energy. You know, just computers being on is what it is.
Yeah. And there comes a point where eventually it won't be worth it and no one will mine any more Bitcoins. And then it will just, all of the energy that's used will just be about processing transactions. And adding
which I also
to those
hear
blockchains.
Is not inconsiderate too. Yeah. And I don't know
that
will
grow as you know, because the blockchain gets bigger and bigger, right? So,
right. But as Bitcoin becomes scarce, the value should rise. Yeah. And at some point, it'll rise to the point where it'll be worth it once again to start mining Bitcoin. And then you'll get a few injected. So it's supposed to kind of like be in this eternal balance. Again, this thing's only 10 years old. No one really knows. This thing could be all smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of excitement. A lot of things that I was excited about Bitcoin are not the reasons that Bitcoin are worth $60,000 right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that scares me. Is that very few people are using Bitcoin to, like, you know, transfer currency.
Yeah.
And buy goods and services. It's almost exclusively the way you use gold bullion. It's an investment that you hoard. And there's also, like, I've heard that Bitcoin can be slow. Like the blockchain, like, you know, it's supposed to be like, hey, it takes you 3 days to transfer your money to Germany and you Bitcoin can do it in the tenth of a second. I've heard, like, you know, Bitcoin taking like a transaction taking like 5 days to clear from the chain in some states. So like
depends on gas fees, which is the amount you're willing to pay to process a transaction, which is supposed to be way cheaper than the amount that, you know, traditional cash does. But also that's not been true for like Ethereum and stuff lately because the networks are so congested. Like, yeah. I don't know where this is going. And I can't really explain to you the underlying tech. Sorry.
No, I don't think very few people could. You need like doctorates in computer science and cryptography to really understand it.
Themselves to come out.
But if you understand basic encryption, like a YouTube video of an hour or two length will probably get you 99% of the way there. So,
yeah.
Okay, moving on to ZH. First way to go into vaccinations. Well, thank you. It's pretty easy. I just got stuck by a needle. It was the scientists and doctors and the nurses that put it into me, that the real heroes. A lot of people are want. Okay, so yeah, I got, speaking of monsters, I got one on my desk here. HBO Max same day premieres, or what HBO Max movies same day premieres can we expect podcasts for? I'm sure you both know, but for the group, HBO Max is putting the entire Warner Brothers slate of movies for 2021 on the streaming service and in theaters on the same day. So far, it's not been the blockbuster. So far, it's been the not blockbusters, but out of the latest, which you both mentioned on Sci-Fi Sundays, was Godzilla versus Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Want to ask? Okay, so he's essentially presenting us with a list, or she, I'm not sure, ZH. Wants to know podcast yes or no on these Warner Brother HBO Max collaborations. Godzilla vs. Kong,
yep,
already podcasted. Mortal Kombat, and also listen to our Godzilla vs. Kong if you want us to hear us talk about all the movies we're going to do for the next few months. Mortal Kombat, we have made a commitment to do. Mm-hmm. In the Heights, nope, don't know what that is.
It's a Space musical Jam with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's right.
Yeah.
I want to watch that, but Jim said no fucking way.
I'm not interested.
Space Jam, we're both out on that. Suicide Squad, which is mid-August.
Ugh. Ugh.
This is James Gunn, though, and the cast.
Oh, God. I like James Gunn's other stuff. I don't know. Maybe.
Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena.
No, don't care about him. It's just these DC comic book movies. Why?
I mean, some of them are good. I like Joker. I like Harley Quinn.
Sure.
Some of them are bad.
Suicide Squad. Okay. Probably.
The Many Saints of Newark, which is a Sopranos sequel with a stellar cast. It's got Michael Gandolfini playing a young Tony Sopranos. John Bernthal. Vera Farmiga as his mother. Oh, that's pretty inspired. Bring about Ray Liotta. I'm trying to think of some go through. The Corey Stoll, Mr.
Ray Liotta
himself. Yeah.
God, I can't believe. Is he
Leslie Odom Jr.?
Hmm. This seems like a bad idea, but I'll probably check it out.
If it's a movie, I don't know. If it's a movie and it's a Sopranos prequel, that sounds kind of cool. And I'm on a Sopranos kick right now. So this is later in the year. We haven't figured that out yet.
Hmm.
Dune. Now, this is where it's going to get controversial because Jim's a hard no and I'm a hard yes. So what I think I'll do is I'll find someone without their head up their dune ass, and I will get a person who loves the shit to do it with me. And I'm there's no shortage of those people that exist. So definitely I'm going to see that day one. King Richard. This is the story of Richard King Williams, Dick, father of Serena and Venus Williams. Interesting, because the thing I know about him is he's a Jehovah's Witness and he raised those kids to be Jehovah's Witnesses. Yet they're world famous multi-million dollar tennis athletes, which is very outside my Jehovah's Witness experience. So I kind of am curious about that.
I guess that would be where they would go with that, right? They would have to talk about that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they have to, but it would be, I would be a 10 times more interested in it if they were.
Yeah.
And then finally, Matrix 4. That's coming out this year?
I mean, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, the new Matrix is a day one cover. Like, even if it's a flaming wreck, I will be there to watch it crash and talk about it. But
you know what model I really want is the Nebuchadnezzar. I would love to get a model kit of that thing.
It's a sweet, sweet chip, especially if you could get it like the LED, the gravitational plates. If you could if they made it like it was like a Tesla coil where it actually had like static electricity crackling and that'd be the bomb, man.
Yeah.
Be careful. There's a 1 in 10 chance of dying during the construction of this kit. In closing, ZH says, your friendly AMC manager here at my theater was one of the last AMCs to open this past week. I thought I would share, Godzilla sold out in my area with capacity restrictions and not selling any food. So I think we're going to be fine. I kind of think so too. In the short term, because I think there's a lot of people excited to get back out in the public life. I am.
Yeah.
Long term, whether this permanently harms people's expectations and the fact that like really big TVs with really nice sound systems are getting cheaper and cheaper all the time, I don't know long term, but short term, I think you're right. But
yeah,
I hope so, because I like movies.
It'll bounce back short term. I think long term movie theaters are going to be niche, very niche. But we'll see.
The MMA casual wonders if I have any thoughts on the Socialist Rifle Association. I joined my local DSA chapter. If you said positive things about them on Swizzbold, I've enjoyed it. As a veteran and pro Second Amendment member, I'm a member of a local gun club that helps my community. I followed a few of these guys on Twitter. I tend to not be down with the more revolutionary types. And I think these, like, they're kind of equal opposite of the NRA. And I think the NRA is kind of crazy in their rhetoric. But I also know, because it's pretty fucking annoying in your average gun culture, it's very, very conservative. Like last night, I went to the range for the first time this year because I finally got my hands in some goddamn 22 ammo. And I asked the lady at the counter, like, hey, have you heard anything about when the you know, ammo restrictions are going to, like, you know, this, I've heard this COVID stuff. And she launched this whole tirade about fucking Biden. And I'm like,
didn't start,
lady, I've been able to get ammo for like 5 years, and this shit has been like dry, like bone dry for the last year. I'm pretty sure Biden took office like end of January. What the fuck? Like, it, that shit gets so old that they just assume a guy like me walks into the store that I'm going to be down with all that bullshit. It would be nice to be in an environment where the opposite is true too, but like, I don't know. If you got a like a local chapter that's doing like, you know, that's got a good community armory and a nice range and is doing, you know, helping out the community, that sounds great. But if they're a bunch of LARPing doofuses that are talking about the revolution, then maybe that would be a problem. So that's what I think. Alan C. Oh, also Alan C. in the chat had a question about our Twitch partnership. We did not make Twitch partners at this point. We're still affiliates, and I don't think we'll be making it anytime soon, but we'll see what we can build an audience up this next year. But Alan says the 4-part documentary Alan versus Pharaoh has been getting a lot of buzz. Have you seen any of it? And if yes, what did you think? If not, how familiar are with the allegations and have you followed the story in the past? So this is Woody Allen versus Mia Farrow on the subject of whether Woody Allen molested one of their daughters. And I haven't seen it because I'm pretty convinced he did. Like, the only evidence to the contrary is, like, you know, the fact that people that really like Woody Allen don't want him to be guilty of pedophilia against his daughter.
Yeah.
See, yeah, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of smoke there. I don't know why in the world the children and the brothers and sisters would be saying the things they do if he was. I don't know. And it's different because, like, Michael Jackson, like, I had gotten, by the time I watched that documentary, I had gotten talked into the popular narrative that Michael Jackson kind of got railroaded and was kind of like an innocent weirdo with a weird, troubled upbringing that made him relate to children differently. And it was all innocent. And then you watch that documentary and, like, oh, no fucking way. Oh, no way. Mm-hmm. So I watched that because it actually had information that changed my mind. And this one, like, you know, it's Ronan Farrow is the one producing it. And he's kind of like, that's his whole deal. Investigative journalism about sexual abuse. So, like, yeah. 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 There's a lot of people in chat saying it's pretty, pretty rough stuff. So, like, I feel like I already I'm all good on that. But if it holds Woody Allen accountable to the extent that he was guilty, then it's probably a good thing. Anything to add, Jim?
No, I don't know anything about the situation.
OK. WC and me, and I've never been a big fan of Woody Allen either. I've seen a couple of movies and, like, he's like a more sophisticated Kevin Smith, and you know, like, I'm not even the biggest Kevin Smith fan. I do like some of the stuff Kevin Smith's done, but, like, some of that Woody Allen shit is just weird.
Jay and Silent Allen, is that one of his movies?
Yeah. Yeah, Blunt Man and Allen Strike Back, something like that. Okay, WC and Me says, would love to hear your thoughts on Mr. Affleck's commentary. And he forwarded us a clip from the Armageddon DVD commentary track he recorded where he lights up Michael Bay for the ridiculousness of the hypothesis that it's easier to train 7 minors to be astronauts than it is to train 7 astronauts to be minors.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes on and on for like 2 minutes about how, like, oh, yeah, NASA can build rockets, but I don't understand transmissions and all this other stuff.
It's glorious. This is one of the best commentaries I've ever heard, or certainly the best section of it, because I don't remember. I had the Armageddon DVD and I don't remember this commentary, but this was when into commentaries. So I know I've listened to it. Maybe
Affleck's good. His commentary for Some of All Fears, where he's taking runs at Tom Clancy, is gold.
I just think they give him a bottle of bourbon and say, go for it, man, because he clearly is, like, a little bit. He's had a couple of drinks or something. He's like,
or maybe a couple
kind of slurred his words a little bit, but he's just laying into Michael Bay here. I think it's great. I think I agree with his points. Like, training drillers to be astronauts is kind of a stupid idea in the amount of time that they have, which is like a week. And he goes hard at him. And I loved it. Made my morning.
I have a nuanced view that I think the original plan as envisioned by NASA, which is you send pure astronauts to do mining with untested space equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Is almost as stupid as the idea that, oh, you don't need to do that. You just need to train the miners up to be astronauts. Like, it seems like specialization is the way to go. Like, you want to train the miners just enough that they can do their job without dying under the close supervision of an astronaut.
Yeah.
And you want the astronauts cross-trained enough that under the guidance of a miner that's maybe wearing a spacesuit or in the command module or whatever, that they can, because, like, I do buy the fact that, like, forget like drilling on Earth, like, who the fuck knows what you're going to hit drilling into a comet that's degassing and fracturing and doing all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, there's probably all kinds of stuff, you know, you need to know about that process. And
there's like a feel, right? Depending on what type of, like, they lay this out in the movie. And I think they're right. Like, Bruce Willis would have a feel for drilling that yep. he would have the experience necessary to be able to not break equipment and shit like that. They only have a finite amount of equipment up there. So if they break it,
what happens
fucked.
If you do destroy the transmission and on the first, you know, 16 feet of drilling, you know, like,
yeah,
but like, it's also ridiculous that, yeah, you would, but you know, like, Bruce Willis isn't going to fucking fly the shuttle either.
No.
So like, it's like, you're really training them on how to wear a spacesuit and not die.
Right.
And the miners or the astronauts you're training on how to like keep the miners from not. Yeah. So like, I think it's a little column A, a little column B.
You pointed out that that's actually how it goes down in the movie, right? They send a bunch of astronauts up with them Yeah. And I think you're right about this. I think they send two shuttles
There's
up.
Two
and
shuttles.
One of them
they dock at the Russian.
Up.
Yeah, they dock at the Mir space station, and one of them gets blown up, and I think kills a lot of the astronauts. So it's like all of the miners and like three astronauts in the final crew mix.
But as I recall, they might have like. I feel like they loaded a bunch of the astronauts into one shuttle. And then they loaded a bunch of drillers into the other shuttle. I feel like the diversity there should have been higher, right?
Yeah. Or maybe they did 50-50. Because I know they got off of the
Mir
and they did. They all got off in the shuttle. So like they could have been like 50-50 going up and then it's whoever could make it through the last remaining shuttle.
Right.
But yeah.
But I'm with him. It's a stupid idea. It's a dumb concept that you could train astronauts or drillers to be astronauts in a week.
Are we pressed for time, Jim? Because like we still got quite a bit of questions and we took a week off last week. So
probably, but sure. Why not?
All right. Follow up question. You can have five bands play at your festival. Who are you booking? Oh, man. I mean,
current
these
living,
are just my favorite bands, right?
Yeah. I know I've answered a variation of this question several times before.
Yeah, I'm going to get the Gift and Chief XL up here. Gift Black Alicious, going to get LP and Killer Mike up for Run the Jewels. Going to do some counter programming with Florence and the Machine. You know who's a good underrated festival guy? Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one of his concerts in 20 years, so bring him back.
Sure.
Metallica puts on a pretty good show. That's an eclectic mix right there.
Yeah, certainly used to. I don't know about anymore.
I only saw him once in a Monsters of Metal tour at the RCA Dome, at the Hoosier Dome, as it used to be called.
Nice. I never saw them. Foo Fighters, I bet, still put on a hell of a show.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
All right.
Go with them. I mean, obviously, Smashing Pumpkins, probably my all-time favorite band.
They're still together, right? In some version, I think.
You know, I haven't kept up with them lately.
Blow them back up again.
After the Zwan stuff, I kind of fell off my radar. I saw them in concert once after that, but.
You know, you can bring them together. The Jim Jones Music Festival.
Uh-huh.
The JJMF.
Serving Kool-Aid at every stand. I don't know.
Yeah.
Fruit Punch. Yeah. Mixers for every drink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd probably throw Rage Against the Machine in there. That'd be a hell of a time. I don't know
you
if
know
those
what?
Guys
Rage,
would still
Rage
do it.
And Run the Jewels are touring this summer.
Like the original lineup of Rage?
With Tom Morello? Zach and Tom Morello for sure. Oh, I don't know about the other guys.
I mean, that's all you really need. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And and I guess Run the Jewels is opening for him. That's going to be a fucking hot ticket, man.
I can't imagine that show.
I think I feel like we got enough bands there.
Gnarl
says pretty,
ICP.
That's a pretty good headliner.
Sure. Let's throw in some the Great Malenko era shit for ICP.
Let's just crash the gathering. Let's just bring our guys there and just fucking airdrop into the gathering. Fuck it.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. Make it a party. let's see. Darmok and Gelat at Tanagra says, hey guys, happy lunchtime. Happy lunchtime. Mm-hmm. Darmok. Thanks for all the years of great podcasts. Well, you're welcome. Something I am still really confused about, would really like to get your opinion on. At the end of Game of Thrones, is winter still coming? Are they all about to die of starvation?
No, winter's here, man. It's a dream of spring after that.
I feel like it's been established that the seasons are more magical than astrological cosmological. And like it has nothing to do with the distance of Westeros planetos from the sun. The Sunatos, it's more about the White Walker shit. So if they killed all the White Walkers, I wonder if you're supposed to understand that the winter will be short this year and maybe not everybody will die.
But keep that fucking wall populated. Yeah, let's keep the wall up for at least another 1,000 years.
mean, they knocked a big section of it down. Like, it's
Let's get that thing built back up. Let's get some people at the castles along the wall, because, man, you saw how that went last time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It turns out that wall was nice to have around, even though it was unused for thousands of years. Although it didn't really do a goddamn thing. They just marched right up to it and knocked it down.
It's true.
Hmm. At least maybe at least fuck the wall.
They knew shit was coming.
Use it to make mixed drinks for everybody in Westeros for the next 100 years and you're good to go.
God.
Daiquiris for everybody.
Yeah.
Robert Kirsten. On the topic of rewatching and podcasts, I am currently rewatching The Walking Dead. I do one episode a night. I listen to the instant cast right after and then the full pod the following day. I love it.
Huh.
Also, I love hearing what's happened with you or both of you and the world. Hashtag cooking with Carol. you know, I don't know if I talked about this or not, but I had a similar experience. That's how I found Tom and Kelly from the Up Yours Downstairs podcast.
Right.
Is that I was really into Downton Abbey. I got in like on the third season and I was going back. And when I was catching up, I was doing the same thing. I'd watch an episode, listen to their podcast, watch an episode, listen to podcast. I think I did that with, I cannot remember the Mad Men podcast that I listened to where it was a guy that sounded exactly like John Hamm. And then a husband and wife, and they were all clinking their glasses and stuff. I loved those guys so much. But I did the same thing because I got on the Mad Men, I think, I got turned on to that between season 2 and 3. So I did another one where I was catching up and listening to that. It's a lot of fun. Like, that's like, if you're really into something, that's a great way to extend it, you know? Especially since who the hell's watching that, you know, old Walking Dead right now but us?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I did that for Lost with Jay and Jack.
Oh, that'd be a good one. Or man, a good X-Files podcast.
I got back into that. So I tried it when it first came out and I watched a few episodes and thought, oh, that's cool, but didn't stick with it. And then I got back into it like season 3. And then I probably, if I remember correctly, did a binge very similar to that.
Yeah. That'd have been a good one. Although now the X-Files is on Disney Plus, going on doing that and doing an episode by episode of the X-Files files. Is that the Nanjiani deal? Did he ever finish the whole series or did he just quit as soon as he blew up? Probably quit as soon as he blew up, right?
Maybe. You mean Swole? When he got Swole or when he got big in Hollywood? That happened at the same time? I don't know.
He's had two blow-ups, you're right. He actually blew up in Hollywood and then he physically blew up.
Yep.
Jesus Christ, I saw him on the Harmontown reunion podcast a couple months ago, and he is completely changed his DNA.
Huh.
This man is like his face. I think he might have hit the juice a little too hard. I think the HGH might have.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. He went a little too hard on the HGH. He's a little Bonds. He's a little bit Barry Bonds head.
Barry Bonds head, small head, big body. Is that what you mean?
No, just like that dude's head, like got 3 times bigger. Like everything got 3 times bigger, but it's really, yeah. Like, yeah, it makes everything grow. Turns out
HGH face.
Yeah. It's like a big, big swollen, like it's like a particular phenomenon. It's kind of like acne and shriveled testicles with steroids. HGH makes your head big.
How?
I'm not making this up, am I, Chad?
How does your head get big? Like there's not anything there to grow.
Bones grow.
The bones grow?
Yeah. When it turns out when you expose the human body to the growth hormones that make it grow, shit starts growing.
And if
you
use
a little bit to help the bones, the bones. Oh it swells God. Up, it expands.
I assumed like muscles grew. Like I understand muscles growing, but bones, your skull grows?
I think so. If you're on it for a long time.
Is this gonna be some Titan shit? Is not Johnny turning into a Titan? Is that what you're saying?
He could.
Holy
he might,
shit.
His skin might fall off. He starts eating people. I don't know. We'll have to keep our eye on it. Jake from State Farm says, I'm slowly making my way through Mad Men for the first time. What are the chances you guys will go back to cover seasons 1 through 4? Any itch to complete the catalog like you did with Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad? The itch is certainly there, but I'm never going to say something zero, but it's as close to zero as I can think. Things that could change that are another writer strike to where we have a year of like no new television. Things that could change that could be a Breaking Bad sequel that kicks off that we're trying to generate interest. And it'd be much more like if we did something like that, I'd be more like one podcast a season. So this is the season one podcast. This is season two podcast, something like that. But like, I just can't. Michelle, I know I'm breaking Michelle's heart here and I hate to do that, but like, I also don't want to lead people on. I just can't imagine, except for some big event that like completely changes the way we cover television. Cause that's the thing. We found that with Breaking Bad. We found that with Game of Thrones, like our rewatch audiences are fractional sizes of the main podcast, and Mad Men was never a huge podcast for us.
Yeah.
It'd be like going back and doing Justified, you know, like it
always makes sense for us to spend our time on new shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just the industry we're in. New equals popular.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we did. We almost did. Like I did. I was well on my way of like doing watches and read. And then Jim's like, just nah, can't do it. And I think that was the correct call. Just from a pure monetary standpoint. But see, now it's the bad. Let's do Justified. You know, let's backfill the Americans. Shit.
Oh, yeah. We got five episodes of that. Let's just do the rest of it.
We covered one season of 24. We need to backfill that son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, that'd actually be fun.
I mean, we got to do all X-Files.
Yeah, we did Black Oil and Bee Stings. We're on the hook for that. I think 700 people listened to that black podcast when it was live.
Yeah, right. It was the cast of the show listening to that one, and that's it.
Yeah. Hate listening. Mm-hmm. Hate listening too. Yeah. We had spotty coverage of Justified.
Yeah.
Third season, I think we had the full coverage. Last season, we had the full coverage. Mm-hmm. It's we had a good time. That show is a great show. But yeah, no, I wish we could complete everything. But at least we do have the full Romanoffs. That was a show worth covering. I'm so glad. God damn. Yeah. I wish we could We should go back and just do the podcast for season one of Mad Men instead of Romanoffs, because everyone had a hell of a lot more fun with that. Let's see here. Tulip Blossom. Hey, guys, seen Aaron's Take Out the Wasp on Working Wednesdays on Twitch and all the cicada chat after reminded me when I was growing up, my brother convinced me that if one of those large green Japanese beetles landed on you, it would stick to you forever and you'd spend the rest of your life with a beetle stuck to your arm. That's no way to live. Growing up, did you convince anyone of something ridiculous like this, or was there something that you believed that was just absolutely not true, and you wonder how you ever believed that to begin with? I remember thinking that the average human swallowed 7 spiders in their sleep a year, and thinking that was a fact. And I found out about, and I'm like one of those things where it's like, man, that sounds crazy, but you know, I mean, hell, your mouth is open and like maybe spider, I don't know. And I saw it in print a couple times, right? And it turns out back in the early 90s, there was, I think, a PC computer world journalist or something that was bitching about all the misinformation being spread through email and on forums and stuff. And as a humorous example, made up some facts in this article, one of them, which is a human eats an average of 7 spiders a year in her sleep. And that became reported, like it got like it was like covered by major newspapers and stuff. And it turns out that was just a made up piece of shit.
It's like the Onion articles getting real news coverage, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the closest I can think of to like deliberately being taught or teaching someone bad information that I later had to correct.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, there's nothing ongoing like that where like, oh shit, I learned this when I was 12 and I thought it until I was 30. At least that I can think of right now. We were able to one time convince a friend that their Star Wars soundtrack CD was haunted or possessed. To the point,
I remember this.
Yeah, where they pulled it out of the CD player and destroyed it.
Took the joke too far.
Yeah, but that's not like It's easy picking on you and thinking that for 20 years.
It's easy pickings when the core population you're picking on unironically believes that physical items can be inhabited by demonic forces and spread therefore. Yeah.
How about that? That's a core belief that a lot of people I know had that was totally false. Still possessed to this day.
Yeah. Yep. I certainly did. Boy, the first few times I watch a horror movie, it was a white knuckle experience because I'm just like, oh God, I'm demonized for sure. For sure, indeed. That was the noun, demonized. You picked up a book from a yard sale that's been demonized, and you took it into your home. Jesus Christ! All right, that's a lot worse than Beatles. You would think. Call me Pliskin 666. All right, Pliskin, Snake. Hey, first time, long time. Well, welcome. Over the past few years, I've been completely obsessed with modular synthesizers. I love playing with them, designing them, building cases for them, talking about them. My only problem is I've never met a single person who knows what they are. Sure, there are online communities and YouTube channels, but it's just not the same as being able to talk and jam with real people who share your passions. Have you guys experienced this kind of hobby isolation? If so, what was the hobby and how did you deal with it? So far, I think I've only ended up annoying my girlfriend with my incessant synth chatter. Anyway, thanks for all you do. You might know a little bit more about, I mean, I know what a modular synthesizer is.
I mean, I assume I do, but I couldn't talk about it with you. Sorry.
So I think you play, it's the reason that the MIDI ports exist on a keyboard, right?
Sure. Yeah. What I imagine it is it's some bit of electronics designed to produce a certain set of sounds. But I couldn't guess at it beyond that.
I guess, like, here's the thing, like, since the internet's existed, I've never felt like I had no outlet for my hobbies because I was able to quickly find a group nearby me that participated in it, or I scratched my itch by, you know, joining a forum or a newsletter or a Usenet group that was around the thing. So I felt like, yeah, and I've had a bunch of weird hobbies like RC helicopters and airplanes. You know, particular brand of motorcycle, particular brand of car, sailing, stuff like that. Bushcraft right now. Like, I don't know anyone that does this shit but me, but like, I've got a whole community of YouTube people that like, I feel like, or I got a parasocial relationship with, you know, I'm just gonna sit and watch this guy and you learn a lot, you know, like YouTube is just an incredible resource for that kind of stuff.
It's like, it's always different talking about things in person with people, right? Like I didn't have a lot of experience talking about like Star Wars extended universe shit online, even though there were communities for that. And I know you participated in some of them. Mine was always limited to like the friends that I had that were into that. And it was like three people or maybe four people. And that was cool. That was really cool to have that group of friends who were into it. But like one of the things that I got really into, obviously I got this shit behind me, is like video game collecting, right? And I don't have any friends who are into that, and there are communities online that there are thousands of people who are into that, but I didn't really participate. I don't know, I have a hard time participating in communities online because it doesn't feel, it's not as satisfying. It's just like I can't get to know these people in the way that I want to, and communication is hard online. Yeah, so I wish I had, you know, friends who were more into that stuff, or probably this modeling thing is going to be similar. If I do end up getting into that, is like I'll have to find people online who are into it, because I don't even have like a group of friends right now. I've got you as a friend. I've got my brother as a friend. I haven't spoken to my friends from Indiana in a long time because I haven't been able to go out there. So like, I don't know. And they're probably not into modeling and stuff like that. So.
Probably not. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, when you have real life friends and they're not into your shit, that feels kind of isolating too.
Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because like I remember when I was so happy to have found like a model helicopter club that was like within a close drive, but I went there and they were all a bunch of rich dudes. And their idea, like at the end of every flight session, they would just do destruction derby with their shit. Like, they would just, like, they would, like, destructively fly, like, as a joke. Like, you know, the guy's got his new $1,500 helicopter. They would fucking down it. And I'm like,
no, thank you.
I'm not like that, guys. This $500 chopper is it. Like, I can't even really, like, afford to repair a decent wreck of my own making.
Yeah.
I felt like that's, like, that was a little dejected. Because, like, the first couple times I showed up, it wasn't like that. But then, like, it happened one time, and then every day that day, that was the most fun. It's like, oh, it's dim, you know, it's like, so I was like, I'm getting my bird down 10 minutes before close and packing up.
Yeah, you might be taken out of the sky if you don't.
By a rogue chopper. Rich dudes from like Fishers and what's the other, Carmel, that like, yeah, I should have known Northside Helicopter Club is going to be high rollers. But
anyway. That's the thing that the pandemic's done, though. I do plan on finding some more social groups once these restrictions are lifted, because
go see if meetup.com is still a thing and try to get back into forming some actual friendships. All right, we're getting close to the end here. Joshua Heater from Nomaha, more like Nomaha, am I right?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Hey guys, you've mentioned you've occasionally gotten better numbers doing vintage or classic movie reviews compared to first run bald movies. Yeah, I mean, if we've done a shitty first run bald movie. Here's a list of movies with milestone anniversaries either in 2021 or 2022. Any chance of them ending up on the Bald Move Prestige or Bald Move Pulp? I guarantee some of these are already on our calendar because we're on the ball on this shit. 2021, Ocean's 11, 20-year anniversary. I know that's on our calendar, and I'm pretty sure we're going to do it because I love that movie. I just rewatched them all recently. Independence Day, the big 25-year anniversary. That's July.
Mm-hmm. It's July.
I'm sure, like, it's on our calendar. We probably will do it, right?
Or something. Probably, yeah.
It's, I don't know how to, like, a favorite. Yeah, that probably end up being like a 3-hour fucking podcast too. Swingers, 25 year anniversary.
I don't care about Swingers. Like, that's not my movie, but I get that it's a lot of people's movie.
The Rocketeer. When is The Rocketeer coming? Because I just watched The Rocketeer over spring break, and god damn, it holds up.
Huh.
I made Jack and Cecily watch this. So they were kind of like resistant, but they, like, 5 minutes in, were both sucked into it. 1991. So it's going to be out this year. Release date, June 21st. Woof. That's brutal, because I know, like, starting at the middle of June to the middle of July, there's like back to back to back to back first run bald movie that's going to be out. And it's a little nichier, but I don't know. I'd like to. I don't know. What's your interest in? Have you seen The Rocketeer?
I couldn't even tell you. I don't know if I have seen it. It was years. It was when I was a kid, but
okay.
I don't know.
In 2022, Titanic's 25th year anniversary. I don't know how I feel about that one. Like, I like Titanic. I think it's good, but like, what can you say about it? It hasn't been said. Whether Rose fat ass killed Leonardo DiCaprio. That's like a raging debate I hear.
What? Telling him to let go of the fucking thing she didn't want to let go.
It's about her not being able to float on a door or some shit. I don't know. It's a bunch of misogynist bullshit.
Oh,
anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
I
don't know about that one, but here's one that I'm going to insist on. Gangs of New York. That movie blew me the fuck away when I saw it for the first time about a year and a half ago. And I couldn't believe how, like, fresh and relevant it felt. And just an incredible, incredible, like, spectacle. I would really like to do that one.
I hear there are some bad accents in that. I've seen it. I don't remember much of it at all.
Nah, it's good. It's like, it's, man, it's such an, it's just a great addition to Scorsese's gang shit, you know, like showing, like, how, like, this is just really in the immigrant, you know, like, this is just essentially what happens. This is like a phase immigrants go through, you know, where they're kind of like outlaw in the normal culture. So, like, fuck it, we'll just do our own shit. And like how that, you know, because this was the Irish versus the. It's like the Protestants, like the original Protestant Americans, you know, the the Native Americans, they called themselves, versus pilgrims. The Irish Catholics. Yeah, yeah. So like, yeah, we've always hated immigrants in this country, it turns out. But yeah, I would love to do that. Freddie Denton from Texas. Freddie Denton, isn't that Freddie C? Oh, Freddie. Freddie, yes, Freddie from C from Denton, Texas.
Wait,
is this C? It's been a lie my whole life. Freddie from Denton, Texas.
Yes, but also
no.
Yeah.
Tomorrow marks 1 week into my planned 1 month sabbatical. What's the longest time you guys have taken off of work? Jim, I could have sworn that you had taken off a whole year before. Yeah. What did you do? Do you have any suggestions? Light travel is in order, but I mean more for the day to day.
Skyrim. I suggest grabbing a copy of Skyrim for the PS3 and just spending 100 plus hours playing that. I have taken large periods of time off of work in the past several times, just because I get fucking burnt out. I don't want to do it anymore. I did that once when I went to Chicago. I did that. I worked a little bit, like contract stuff, while I was up there for like 6 months, but didn't work a ton. And then when I came back, I worked for a while longer, and then took about a year off when you and I were living together. By the end of those, I always just end up like eating beans and rice pretty much nonstop for my meals, because I'm like, God, do I want to go find a job, or can I stomach another meal of just rice with some spices
right.
on it?
I'm out of money. I guess I have to eat. Yeah.
I'm like, God damn it. Fine. I'll go get another job. I don't know. What I do is I just decompress. I get back into things that I enjoy. I just enjoy not having a schedule for a while, but that's not for everyone. And it's probably not for me anymore. I think I was doing that in my 20s because I could afford to do that. As I approach old age, I have to think more about like, what am I going to do if I have no money when I'm 60?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm going to go back to that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've ever had longer than 2 or 3 weeks off. Like, usually our Christmas shutdowns are about the longest I've ever been off of work since I was like 16. I could have taken off, because like when I was in between jobs after that last regional convenience store, like I had a pretty attractive buyout offer. But I got talked into a buddy of mine starting a business and trying to like vertical market some of that software. So like I ended up working pretty intensely. I mean, it's fun work, like a lot of it is, you know, and I liked working with my buddy Nick. But I could have had probably 6 months of doing nothing and still had about half of that. But instead, I invested in the company and it didn't really go anywhere. Yeah, that's one bummer. If that's one thing in 2011, I'd be like, hey, When this thing, you get bought out, plow it into Bald Move. Just go full time with Bald Move, and then that would have been a trouble free way to kickstart that. Because weren't we living together at the same time? No, that's the other thing, is like you were just getting off your big sabbatical, and man, if that had happened like 8 months before, it would have been a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
it'd have been a beautiful thing. But all right, let's see. Design Hero from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Midwest representing this week. Recently moved to a new to us home that was built in the 50s. We have several projects on our plate for the next few years, no doubt. One of those projects was cleaning out the attic, which is full of stuff the previous owner left behind. During this joyous project, I came across something truly odd, 24 mason jars full of salsa that was dated 1996 with black Sharpie. As tempted I was to open one and take a whiff, I ended up just throwing them all in the trash.
Yeah.
God, that's a heavy fucking trash thing, man.
Yeah.
I would have opened it. I would open it because it's odds are it could have still been good. You know, that canned shit can stay.
You
could have
started the zombie apocalypse. It's trioxin in those fucking things. You're going to turn into a sludge monster and yeah, it's all over.
Is Oklahoma not in the Midwest?
Nebraska?
When does the West start? Yeah.
Nebraska's in the Midwest.
Oklahoma's a state, man. Nebraska's a state too. Nebraska's for sure the Midwestern. I don't know. Fuck it. Whatever.
Yeah, all those Great Plains states, I think, are part of the Midwest, right?
I think so. I don't think the West starts till Colorado. Maybe Oklahoma's like right below Colorado. Because honestly, I'm also a little sketchy on my geography here.
Nebraska, Iowa, yeah, all those states. Midwest. It's shocking how big the Midwest is. The Midwest is like the entire middle of the country.
Yeah, I guess Oklahoma could be south because it's right there above Texas and Arkansas. Arkansas, I definitely think of is, but is Missouri? Missouri, I think, is south too, even though it's right there nestled between Illinois and Kansas and Iowa. It's a gray area. What can you say?
Yeah.
Anyway, what is the strangest or funniest thing you found after moving to a pre-owned home? Unfortunately, I don't have any really cool stories. Like, a brick of shingles from the previous roof, some cans of dried paint so I know what paint color this is and I don't have to go.
Yeah,
like that's been sure. The extent of an old battery from a lawnmower in a shed. Nothing cool at all.
Yeah, no, you broke open your walls and found like Action Comic number one or something.
No,
none of that.
No, what do you call it? Al Capone's safe. No vaults. I see on Reddit all the time. Like, oh, there's a hidden door and it goes to like a steel vault or something or some shit like that. Nothing like that's ever happened to me.
Nope.
I mean, there's all like little cool stuff like pull up a floor and someone's written like their name and like their date and when they did it, like the project. Like, hey, you know, I did. You know, that's kind of cool. It gives a little personality, but. Nothing cool. Nothing like 24, not even like 24 cans of salsa cool.
Nope.
All right. Corey from New Scotland. Should I sell my house? The market has gone crazy. Houses listed for $125,000 last year are selling for $300,000. It's unlikely I would, as I'd probably have to pay an equally inflated price for another house. Or is there something I overlooked that makes this a no-brainer?
That's the question, because I'm thinking about getting out of this house and I look at the price and I'm like, yeah, good time to sell, but bad time to buy. Do I want to rent until the next market crash or, you know, I don't know. Like it depends entirely on your plans. If you're just going to turn around and buy another house, then it's a wash, right? It's like, well, I sold my house for a large amount, but I also have to pay a large amount for a new one. So,
yeah, I'm sorry. I'm giving hand signals to my son. That is the thing. I feel like unless you're going to sell and downsize, you're just, you know, or if you like Jim says, if you think you're in a bubble and you want to sell and then get an apartment and then wait for things to cool off and buy in the dip. But like, you know, you're talking that's speculation.
Yeah, it could just as easily go the other way. And who knows how long you're going to be renting for and waiting for that. Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
Just look at it as a wash, you know.
Yeah. If you want to like the other thing is like if you sold and moved to an area that's like not as hot of a market, like if you were like if I lived in L.A., I would fucking sell in a heartbeat and go find someplace in the South or Midwest and set up shop and, you know, take my $1 million I just got from my house and buy a real nice $250,000 house. And then you got $750,000 in the bank. Like that's the way you cash out. But yeah, if you're selling one place and you're stuck buying as big as, you know, like that's, yeah, I don't know about that because it's the devil, you know, versus like what happens if the new house has a cracked foundation or some shit you don't know about. So, but that's, you know, like I said, I also feel like I'm pretty conservative when it comes to personal finance. And I always looking for like, okay, what's the downside? I think you got a pretty good head on your shoulders there, Corey. Finally, Caleb Thrower from South Carolina. When y'all peel a banana, do you start the peel from the top or the bottom? Do you peel from the stem down or from the bottom of the banana down? I started to peel my banana from the bottom a few years back and I never succumbed to the soft banana top, making it hard to peel anymore. Just pinch at the bottom and pull. Highly recommended.
Why can't you pinch at the top and pull? I peel from the stem side. Always.
Okay. So that's like, I think the regular way, but like it's a fact that monkeys, to the extent that they eat bananas, they go from They hold the stem like a handle and peel from the top. And I tried that. Now, I don't eat a lot of bananas because I have an allergic reaction to them. It makes my mouth kind of like sore and tingly. But when I do eat bananas, I started adopting that method. And you're right, because it feels like you should have a lot more leverage at the stem end, but it's somehow stronger and thicker. So I always like, yeah, you got the top mushed. Yeah, you always mush the top of it a little bit.
I never mush.
Whereas
the
bottom,
there's a technique.
You pinch and peel, and it just comes right off. And you got the handle. You got the handle right there.
I mean, you got your technique at the bottom. I got my technique at the top. I not only do I pry downward, I pull upward at the same time. So I'm like pulling up, prying down, and it always comes off fine. I never have the mushy banana top.
A lot of people like the stem handle. Telling you, I don't know how many bananas you eat, but you try it stem down, bottom up, just once.
Who needs a handle?
It instantly converted me. You don't need, but it's nice. Like, isn't it cool when a fruit gives you a handle? Like, it's got its own popsicle stick.
I don't know. Nobody eats an apple by holding the stem.
Well, I mean, if an apple had a banana-sized handle, maybe people would, but...
Okay,
let me ask
you. So it's handle-to-fruit ratio is the... determination.
I got into something a couple of years ago that I've since abandoned because I just don't care about not wasting apples this much. But you can actually eat an apple from the bottom. You know that little gross navel thing it's got? If you just like just bite into that and start eating, you can eat the core and everything of an apple. And
I don't eat the core because it's hard to get. I don't not eat the core because it's hard to get at. I don't eat the core because it's fucking disgusting. If I wanted to eat the core, trust me, I could eat the core with my technique.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, but that's the thing. By the time you get to the core, it's just nasty core. Where if you're eating it with all the big, because like there's only like the little tiny, there's only like a golf ball core in the middle that's inedible. And if you have all the healthy apple flesh around it, then it just goes down. You eat the whole apple. But I'm like, I just don't give a shit about wasting an apple that much. Like throw the core. Yeah, I'm probably throwing away, I don't know, twice as much of the core that I really need to. But like, yeah, like it made the middle part of the apple nasty. So yeah, I can do it. Like it's like that's like what was that gum? Like it's like zebra fruit stripes or something. Mm-hmm. Like fruit you stripe. Know, like in school, it's like, hey, you can just eat the paper, and it's true,
right?
But why the fuck would you? Like, you've got a slightly papery gum thing that, you can chew and you can even pop bubbles. But why? You can just peel the paper and throw it away. Like, you can't eat the apple core. It's not going to kill you. Like, I know there's a slightly amount of arsenic in the apple seeds, but it's not. Yeah, Deb's got the concern over the apple seeds. She saw the same G.I. Joe show that I did where G.I. Joe destroyed a blob that was eating a town by essentially backing up a truck full of apples, and it poisoned itself by eating the apples.
Wow.
but I've seen guys eat banana peels.
No, and pineapple come cores. On now. Those people are sick.
Zeke. Yeah. God, what kind of are you? I mean, are these literal animals like a junkyard dog? That's crazy. A banana peel? That just the idea of eating it seems gross. I guess I haven't tried it though.
Too? Because that would be tough.
Yeah, it's roughage, man. Like I said, I mean you can eat it. Yeah, I just saw a movie where a dude ate the orange and peel. I forget what it was, but someone ate the orange and the peel and everything, just bit into it like an apple.
Ugh.
No. That's too much. That's too much.
Yeah.
And it could also be different types of, because I was doing this on Honeycrisp apples, because Michelle puts out a point that like there's kind of sharp slivery points that get stuck in your teeth. I didn't find that when I was eating these apples. These are like big fleshy apples like Honeycrisp, Granny Smith and stuff like that. But like still, it's like, it's recognizably not good apple. It's like, you know, you can eat it. You can eat like the big hunks of fat that come on some steaks, too. But I never do. So I guess some people do, though. Some people like to eat the fat. Different strokes, you know?
Yeah.
If you like the cores, I'll save them for you. You can have as many as you want.
Sure.
All right.
Put them in 26 jars and I'll leave them in my house when I move out.
fermented apple cores. That's it for lunch this week. We'll have, if you missed a lunch question and you felt left out, hey, cheer up. Next week, starting on Monday, there'll be a new lunch thread. You can post it on the forums at forums.baldmove.com or anytime you want to send me a tweet, hashtag bald lunch. And I hoover that up on Fridays too. That's it. Hey, big Twitch Sci-Fi Sunday. We're doing something a little different. We're doing an actual prestige film, The Prestige. Can't get much more prestige than covering the movie The Prestige. I'm not sure if it's going to be our normal joke fest or whether we're actually going to take it a little bit more seriously. But it's a really good movie. I'm excited to watch it. And if you don't know, this is where we watch the movies through the Twitch Watch Party technology. Twitch accounts are free. If you have an Amazon Prime account, it takes you like 30 seconds to link those things together. And then you can watch what we're watching at the same time, automatically synced up on your computer device. Or you can get fancy and sync it up with your television and then have us on the cell phone, however you want to do it. But yeah, we're going to be watching one episode of Star Trek and then The Prestige, Christopher Nolan's The Prestige. I'm excited about that. That's what's happening this weekend. And of course, we got a whole slate of content coming up next week for you guys to enjoy. So without further ado, I guess we're going to get on to the weekend, everybody. Or at least me and Jim got to do some bullshit. We got some weekly meeting stuff. We got some ads to record. But everybody else, hope you have a real nice weekend. Hope you have real nice weather wherever you live. And thank you for all your support. Thanks for keeping Bald Move running. We do appreciate it. It's been doing this for, this is now, I think, the longest career I've ever had.
Oh, easily for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I worked at that one gas store I worked, but I was half-time a contractor and then I was this and that. But like, yeah, this is the longest job. And you guys have been excellent bosses. Thank you very much. Thanks for your support. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Goodbye.